It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Here every week, win, lose or draw, talking all things United. This is the United People's Podcast.
Yes, everyone, how are we doing? Sam here, welcome to another episode of the United People's Podcast. I tell you what, we've got a full house here tonight. We've got four of us on. It's me, it's Bao, it's Alex and it's Chris. And it's the first time we've had four on here in a while. I tell you what, we must have won on the weekend. Everyone's like, yeah, come on in. Oh, come on, come on in. Look, we'll speak about the game against Fulham. We won 1-0. It wasn't a perfect game, but I tell you what, it was much improved on recent weeks. We're going to speak about the goal from Bruno, last minute winner. We're going to speak about VAR. I think a lot of this conversation is going to be about VAR, I'll be honest. But Bao, how you doing, mate? Nice to see you back.
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Good. It's a welcome 3 points. I think we didn't expect to see a performance. It's more of a get the results first and then hopefully performances follow.
Yeah, that's how we were a few weeks ago, and then we won three games in a row. We thought, okay, we can build on this, and then, well, City and Newcastle happened.
I mean, we were asking questions last week whether the players are playing for him, and judging by the celebrations on the pitch and off the pitch, I think it's fairly, well, it looked like they cared.
Yeah, in my opinion, you don't score last minute winners if you're not playing for a team. Because surely at that point in the game, you're just kind of given up, right, Chris? Well, we've done it against Brentford now with McTominay with two late goals, and we've done it against Fulham. It's the old United habit, I suppose. That is the United way, scoring late goals. But you enjoyed it particularly, obviously. Mr. Bruce Knees there in the away end. Enjoyed it, stayed to the end?
Yeah, stayed to the end. Bit of a smash and grab. I mean, perfect away day. 90th minute winner. You can't really beat it, particularly after the VAR decision in the 8th minute, which I still don't quite understand what happened. You know, like the City game, I was texting my mate saying, sorry, why was that disallowed? No communication in the ground, not clear at all what had actually happened. So that was a bit disappointing, but obviously, yeah, nothing like a last-minute winner, all the players diving in at the end and everyone getting behind the team. So, you know, the performance doesn't matter. When you get a last-minute winner like that.
Alex, I'll ask you down there, right? At what point do you think performances matter? Because I think I'm still at the point where with Ten Hag and the situation we've got at United, it's results are what's important right now, the points on the board. Like, we have been playing largely atrocious football all season and we're level on points with Brighton and we're 6 points behind Arsenal. And if that one decision against Arsenal, that Garnacho offside, which was millimetres decision, if that went the other way, we'd be level on points with Arsenal this season. And we've been playing awful. At what point do fans really expect performances to start with this United team? Is it maybe after the international break, Luke Shaw might be back? I don't know. What do you think, Alex?
Well, I mean, yeah. Ten Hag's been pretty unfortunate in terms of not having his first choice team available to him, as he over the last 18 months. Sorry, you guys carry on. My dog's don't mad at me. Missy just walked in. One of you take over. Bad timing.
Ah, you just can't get him anywhere. The most professional podcaster in the world, Mr. Alex Lang. Bao, I'll throw the same question to you then. In terms of results, we've got what? Last six games, we've got four wins, two losses. Three nil back-to-back defeats against City and Newcastle. Got Copenhagen and Luton, which we'll speak about a little bit later on. But so much pressure was on Ten Hag going into that game. I think with all the reports about leaks and player power and players being upset about Sancho and Maguire, I think from a tactical perspective, we kind of simplified the press against Fulham. It was more like Bruno and Højlund playing a little bit up, almost like a 4-4-2-ish. They kind of pressed together. It worked. And United looked a little bit more in shape out of possession. We weren't creating enough, which has been the stand, which has been a problem all season long. Like, we're level on points with Brighton. We've scored 12 goals. They've scored 24. I don't know how we're level on points with Brighton. We're like, we're winning games by one goal. Like, we've beaten our last three wins, three consecutive away wins, by the way, have all been by one. Sheffield United, Burnley, and now Fulham. Like, I think all circumstances, it feels like we should be in a far worse position this season than we kind of currently are.
Without that, I mean, I saw a little clip from Saturday, which kind of alludes to what you just said, where Onana had the ball and there was just three defenders in front of him. I think one of the midfielders had come in and everybody else was like so far up the pitch. So your chances of kind of playing out from the back there, yep. And literally there's more Fulham players in a press without the ball than we had with the ball behind the ball. So it's like, if you lose that ball there, you're in shit. And then all that happened is we've knocked it long and it's gone past all of our midfielders and attackers who are practically standing like six or seven in a row. And it's gone to their keeper. And then you could kind of see, well, why so much of a game passes by, because we don't put our foot on the ball. We don't play the ball. And as I think you mentioned on the weekend, Anthony, another game where it's just passed him by and he's just wasting every single time the ball's in possession when he's got it. And
I really don't like... I went really fucking hard on Maguire over the last 18 months or so, more so than any player, easily. I always like to think that I've kept my criticism professional in the fact that I'm focusing on the football. I'm not going anything beyond football. It's just I'm judging him by what I'm seeing and what he's saying off the pitch related to his football. But Maguire, we'll speak about him from a positive sense before you can move on to Anthony. Like Chris, like he played what seemingly looked like 85 minutes with a concussion. I don't know how that happened in the first place. He looked a little bit out of sorts. But at a time when Ten Hag has needed players to kind of step up for him, you wouldn't have put Maguire top of that list. And he's been probably one of the most dependable players in these last few games.
No, definitely. I mean, we were joking before the match about who would be your player of the season. And one guy in the pub said, well, probably Maguire based on the last couple of games. And he did it again. He was calm with the ball. He passed the ball pretty well at times as well. Long balls forward, played well. And I think he's going to keep that spot now. One thing I did notice after the final whistle, all the players came over and thanked the away fans as they always do. Varane headed straight down the tunnel, didn't even look at the away end, just stormed straight off the pitch and into the dressing room. So there's clearly something.
Probably injured himself in his 30-second cameo, Chris, I would have thought.
There's clearly something there. So I think Maguire's back in the team.
I think I've always said that everyone knows, right? I think that maybe not everyone does. If you play Maguire against teams that don't press him, then he's got time on the ball. Maguire looks like a very good defender. It's just when you get him in the games like City and Liverpool and Arsenal, when the tempo gets cranked up to the top level, that he shits his pants. And that will always be the case. But
I think he's gotten his confidence back, hasn't he? Like, he's had a run in the team. And it seemed like every time he played, something ridiculous went wrong. Like, he would...
About the own goal for England in the international break.
Yeah. Or he would score a header and it would get ruled out for some ridiculous reason, or he'd give away a penalty or whatever. And it just seems like that cloud that was hanging over him has sort of cleared up and he's got his confidence back. He looks really good on the ball. I mean, this is the sort of the player that I think when we first bought him, that's kind of how he played, right? He would get in, he would ping those diagonals. He's probably one of the only players in that deep area of the pitch that can actually hit that diagonal ball out wide to Rashford or whatever. So I think, you know, he's probably one of the first names on the team sheet. And for me to say that, I mean, there's a bit of bile in the back of my throat saying it, but you've got to give him his dues.
You do have to give him his dues. But look, there's obviously a massive... This isn't just Man United this weekend, but VAR reared its ugly head and has been rearing its ugly head all season long. Correct me if I'm wrong, I've never heard the phrase subjective offside before. Did they just make that up on the spot? Has that been said ever before? Because I've never heard that. I thought the concept of offside was you're either onside or you're offside. It's a clear distinction between the two. But on the field, it was a 4 minutes where they... is he involved? No, I'm not sure. 4 minutes, and they brought the ref over. Again, I don't remember seeing a referee looking at a VAR decision on field. It's normally like a handball or a penalty.
You mean an offside decision? Yeah,
yeah. Sorry, an offside decision. My bad, because it was onside. Nobody was even marking Garnacho. It didn't actually matter. Nobody was actually looking at him. It's insane. And obviously, the Newcastle one has brought even more into the spotlight when it comes to VAR.
Do you see what Gary Neville just did on Sky Sports?
Mate, what is it? Oh, Gary Neville. Like, I like Gary Neville. I like him, but he's... What you talking about the ball on the side, guys?
Yeah, the ball on the line.
Oh man, it kind of feels like a sketch show. It feels like Peep Show all over again.
He did have a valid point though. When you look at it from different angles, one angle from directly above the line, where they play, Sky just plays the ball, for those who just don't know, literally like a millimeter on the line with the rest of it over. But then when they showed the different angle, it showed like the whole ball was like at least 3-4 centimeters out of play.
Yeah, I know, but the stupid thing is that they're now saying that decision there, they couldn't give it as out of play because there was inconclusive evidence. But the exact same thing happened against United and they decided it was conclusive evidence. And the on-field decision for the Hoyland-Brighton one was a goal. So the on-field decision got overturned. Therefore, they had conclusive evidence to overturn it. Whereas Gary Neville just completely undermined that by saying, no, you can't have conclusive evidence. That's the big frustration of it all is the pure, utter inconsistencies. It's what happens in one game doesn't apply to another game. Like, did you see Van Dijk against Luton getting mauled down in the box?
And then it's more of a foul than Hoyland one on Rodri.
Like, so
it happens every week, man.
I thought VAR was brought in to clear up clear and obvious errors.
That's not a clear and obvious error.
You had to watch that back 15 times to even understand.
And they still couldn't make a decision.
What it was given for.
Yeah, that's how it was sold. That's how it was sold, Chris. But then again, they said that they weren't going to put speed cameras on the motorway when they sold those into us. And look where we are now. So,
are you trying to say that they lie? Are you trying to say they lie, X?
Well,
is that what you're suggesting?
I'm just saying that there's somebody somewhere probably getting rich off it. And
my wife got caught by one.
she shouldn't be going so far, should she? Well,
she's doing 63 in an average speed zone. It was cut down from 70 to 60. She should do like 63, 64.
That's the only speed zone I've ever got, was on the motorway when it was like, you know, the smart cameras that go down from 70 to 60. I got done at 62.
Whereabouts was this, pal? We should just do a little public service announcement, make that a segment.
Warsaw Junction, between the Junction 10 and the M54.
You're very welcome.
But I think we've done something that the media tends to do, and we've sort of glossed over our VAR thing. When you asked the question, then we went straight on to Newcastle. But I think what they sort of said about the subjective bit of it is, you know, was Maguire interfering with play? And I just think that surely that should just be a black and white thing, like if you're trying to deliberately play the ball. But then again, I suppose, how can you prove intent? And he was sort of getting pushed and everything. It's just ridiculous. And the amount of time it took, I really felt for the lad standing in the away end, because I sort of knew watching on TV it was going to get ruled out. But another great moment stolen.
Alex, you said it there as well. You can't, like, even the Bruno goal at the end, you're like, what was there, like an off? Maybe there's a hint of offside three passes before the goal. Like there's part of your brain
handball,
now. As a football fan, a modern football fan, there is part of your brain which is not allowed to celebrate a goal. Whether it's 5%, whether it's 10%, whatever it is, there's part of your brain that's not allowed.
Well, let me post this, right? So, Bal, you probably go to by far the most games in here, and then followed by Chris. Do you feel that, like, when you're in an away end, no matter how many pints you've had or whatever the situation is, that United goals have been tinged by VAR, and like you can't quite celebrate the way you used to?
Oh, mate, massively. I remember when Liverpool, we know Rashford scored, and I think Fred took out Fabinho in our half. I'm on the chair on the Stretford end, and Matt's like, it's not a goal. And I'm like, I get down, like, oh, fucking hell, it's just going to pop a burst my balloon. But then they gave it. But at that interim moment, it's like,
we don't know what to do.
It just literally kills the whole moment.
Well, you had the Garnacho one stolen from Arsenal, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, Arsenal, yeah. So, but, I mean, I call them swings and randoms. I don't really moan about them. I think you're
the question I'll ask.
Yeah, that guy, an actual one. I was in an Arsenal pub in North London when that went in, and I went and wheeled around the pub very soon after a great.
Yeah, it's like Abe Simpson when he walks into the strip club when Bart's working there. That was you in the pub. You're like, yeah. Straight out the door.
No, it was like I just went back into the bush like Homer.
Now, the question I'll ask before we move on, how do you fix it? Because I don't think it's going away. They've kind of put too much into it already, but it's fully not working.
What do they do in Europe that they've got the semi-automatic system that they can't adopt that here in the UK?
I don't know, but I'm guessing that their Premier League, this is a guess, it feels like the Premier League are applying it to a lot more than what they originally intended to, rather than just being like goals or red cards or offsides. It feels like it's so much more than that now, where they're putting it back saying, oh, four passes before the goal happened, somebody tugged on someone's shirt and shit like that.
I'd agree with that. And using the word you used there about subjectivity, video assistants work really well in things like tennis and in cricket, where, you know, it's either in or it's out. You know, you've got a black and white decision and no one's going to argue about it. And goal line technology came in over a decade now, and that's worked really well. So you need to take it back a step. It's for clear and obvious errors, and it's for black and white decisions, not, oh, his left toe was offside or someone was interfering with play seven passes ago.
Those sports, though, Chris, they're like perfect for video assistant referees. Like there are natural stoppages in them. The area of play is a lot smaller. Like in cricket, you're talking about an area of play that's tiny in terms of, you know, where the wickets are. Tennis court's really small; it's the size of the 18-yard box. You know, football is a game with no natural breaks. It's a game of like it's the beautiful game, right? It's supposed to be played with flow and rhythm. That's why it's all about the fans get behind and momentum builds, and VAR just like kills that. And I think that if I could do anything, I'd get rid of it entirely. I'd have just goal line tech and nothing else. But I think my two suggestions would be, firstly, to make certain things non-reviewable so that they just stick with what the referee says automatically and it can't be reviewed. So an obvious one would be ball out of play, because there doesn't seem like there's the ability to, in real time, review from above, you know, because it's such a big pitch. The camera technology doesn't really exist. So like, make that so that that can't be reviewed. And the other one for the offside would be just to make the lines thicker and just say, if there's any overlap at all, it's a goal. And if there's a gap, you know, it'll be more obviously offside, because the margin for error favours the attacker. Those would be the two things I'd do.
Problem solved.
They do need to address it, because you can't be taking 4 minutes to make a decision. I think it was Alan Pardew on the radio today saying it needs to be like a 2 minute clock. If you get to that 2 minute mark and you haven't made your decision, you stick with what the on-field decision is.
And that's too long for me.
2 minutes, I think, is reasonable.
That's too long. No, it's not. It's too long. 30 seconds or a minute at the most.
Well, to be fair, I think that's quite a good idea.
I mean, it's not clear and obvious. If you can't see it within 30 seconds, it's not clear and obvious.
In the NFL, right? They've got replay. When I was kind of a casual NFL fan, one of the criticisms was, oh, there's too many stoppages. But that, again, that lends itself to reviewing decisions and things. But the way they do it in the NFL is coaches have got challenges. You're allowed to make, I think it's two or three challenges in a game. And if you don't get that challenge announced quick enough and the next play happens, then you're shit out of luck. So you've got to make that decision within 20, 30 seconds max.
Do you think they bring challenges in then? Like a team having a fixed amount of challenges?
It's just so American. I'm a real traditionalist when it comes to football. That's why one of the reasons why I was against VAR from the beginning. I couldn't see it being as bad as it's been, though. It really is ruining the game. There's no way you can say you love elite football the way you did 3, 4, 5 years ago. There's just no way you can say that.
All that's happened now is football has just become more of an entertainment thing on the TV.
That's what they're trying to do.
Because it's not there. It's not there for the spectators, because obviously we're the ones who always pay the brunt of it, run for it. But I know you could sit here till the cows come home and talk about VAR.
Well, the other thing is though the fact that it does open itself up to corruption, right? It does make corruption easier if you're able to stop after every goal, every incident, and look at things like, you know, the City shirt pull on Rodri was a prime example of how I'm not saying that that's corruption. I'm just saying, like, if you wanted to change a game and you could say within the rules of the game, that's a foul. So you sort of, you cherry pick that moment and you give a penalty. And you've got these English referees moonlighting in Saudi Arabia on their international breaks and things, going out there getting paid by the same people who own these football clubs. I just think it all stinks.
I said it this week. I said there is 100% going to be some sort of bribery scandal coming with VAR at some point in the next couple of years. Somebody's going to get bought. Because if you control that VAR room, you will control a decision that's probably going to impact the outcome of the game.
And so why are they choosing, you know, decisions like the Hoyland on Rodri? Why are they singling that one individual event out when it happens five times a game?
Because it's United.
You know? I mean,
thing that pisses me off is like when you got twats like Dermot Gallagher refusing to just even categorically even disagree with any, whether he thinks it's right or wrong. Yeah, this is what I think it was the similar to the Garnacho handball at Spurs. Yep. What was it? There's a recent comparison, I can't remember. Oh, what? Yes, Arsenal against Spurs.
Yeah, yeah, Romero, same player.
Is it? It was like, yeah, oh, what's the difference? It was like, yeah, mate, one was handball, one was that.
Sky
was like,
Sports is properly turned into talk sport these days.
Yeah,
properly
yeah, it's awful.
Turned into talk sport.
It's awful.
What has happened to it?
It is awful. I mean, do you remember back, I remember like maybe not even that long ago, maybe 10, 12 years ago, if Sky Sports reported something, it was serious. And now it's fucking Goldbridge and tweeting emojis about things. Like, oh, it's embarrassing.
Well, Marcus Rashford put him in his place today.
Yeah,
I'm not sure he should even be responding to clowns like that. It's just giving him more air.
It wasn't Goldbridge. It was another guy who works for him.
Well, same channel, right?
But it was United Stand, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, United Peoples.
Wait. Hey, less of that.
From Newton Heath to the Busby Babe, Fergie time to the class of 92. This is the United Peoples podcast.
What do you reckon about Copenhagen and Luton then? So we've got, I mean, these games on paper going into the season are not significant, but because of how the season's gone so far, they're both significant, right? Copenhagen, if we don't win at Copenhagen, is that pretty much us out of the Champions League, you think?
Yeah. Well, why should beat Galatasaray at home? So Galatasaray on four, and we're on three. Yeah,
right.
They're on four, we're on three. Then you'll still say 4-3, but it just means if we get a result and we win in Istanbul, then we're through.
So we'll be through before we face Bayern. If we win
If we win our next two games, we're through. Factoring in Bayern beat Galatasaray on Wednesday as well.
What do you reckon about Copenhagen then? Apparently they've got pretty good form, I think, at home in European games. I don't know whether I made that up or not. If on paper you're looking at United, but I don't know.
We've still got paper thin squad. I mean, you know, these European away games are never easy. And what I was saying before I got interrupted by the dog was that Ten Hag has just not had his full squad available to him really at any point. And I don't know if injuries are getting better, are they now?
Well, Casemiro's now out until, I don't know, I think he's going to be out until the new year.
But Alex, you say that with not having your players available, but then when you're consistently playing Antony, who's not delivering, Rashford, who's not delivering, Bruno, who hasn't. Obviously, you can't take all your best players out, but it has to come to a point where, okay, you make players accountable. Like, this is a results business. You're not giving me results. I mean, look at the impact Pulisic had in that goal.
Two things here. Pulisic, he had a couple of games where he started. It was the game before Bayern Munich. It might have been Bayern Munich and then another one after that. And he didn't impact the games at all, really, by comparison.
I'm not crying for him to start because people always make you a guy.
You're right, because Antony is the definition of why no manager at Manchester United should be in charge of transfer targets. Because Ten Hag, as far as he's concerned, he's like, right, fuck, I need a right winger. He goes, who do I go for? He went for what he saw as the best option because Antony was the best probably player that he had seen playing the right wing. And he's just not an £85 million player.
And we did have Sancho as well, who was supposed to play there. Right?
No, but Sancho was brought in as a right winger, but never he was always wanted to play on the left where Rashford was playing. Again,
he would have had a chance to play on the right wing, obviously, if we hadn't signed Antony.
Antony, that's a real bad one on Ten Hag. It's only getting worse, I think. Last season, I defended him quite a bit because I thought, you know, he's scored against Arsenal, scored against City, scored against what was it going, Barcelona. He had impacted quite a few games, and his overall contribution to the team on the right was pretty good last season. This season, it's fucking garbage.
Current form isn't a reflection of his top level. He's come back from that hiatus, and obviously there'll definitely be mental issues and things going on. He's probably not quite at his best, but
I mean the Antony thing is obviously just further compounded with what's happening with Sancho. Do you think that's 160-170 million pounds worth of signings?
That is sick when you say it like that.
Which are delivering nothing.
That should be like four like top class squad players, like four really important players.
It easily could be Declan Rice. You know, I mean, I think Bellingham had his heart set on Real Madrid, but it could be players like that, Caicedo. You know, these players that we need. I'd quite happily have Pulisic on the right wing and Caicedo in midfield instead of Antony. And Amrabat.
I do think that Pulisic, well, I don't know, Ten Hag, do you think the Antony situation, like, you know, when the whole Sancho story first came out and it was whispers about it being favouritism, I didn't really understand the Antony comparisons, because if Sancho was going to play, he would have played through the middle or play on the left, which is where he's hardly played on the right-hand side. So I think that was a little bit weird. But if Ten Hag still keeps playing Antony when he's contributing as little as he is, then I think it's going to give more credence to the whole favouritism concept. And especially if you've got Pulisic. I want to see Mason Mount playing on that right wing, man. I think he's a better option than Pulisic from the start, and then bring Pulisic off the bench.
I don't know where to start with that, mate.
Again, we were talking about last week, he's a Ten Hag signing. He went all out for him, saying he was like, you're going to be a big part of the squad, you're an important player. I don't know if he's just easing him back in from injury.
It's got to do with playing style. I think as it stands, he doesn't feel comfortable playing Mason Mount and Bruno together with the isolated number six. And look, Amrabat was on the bench for the Fulham game as well, because he wanted Eriksen, I suppose, playmaking from deep rather than having any sort of control. Sod knows. But Copenhagen and Luton, do you think we're going to win both of those games? Chris, I'll come to you first, because, I mean, they're big. They're not as big as they should be, but they're big now, I think.
Well, I said it before the Fulham game. You know, we've got not an easy run of games, but winnable games. It was an early kickoff on Saturday. I'm not playing till Wednesday, so I don't think the squad sort of issues come into contention. There's no reason why all the players who started can't start again on Wednesday. So I think we should be coming away with a point, probably 3 points, realistically. I don't think Copenhagen have won in the Champions League this season. Are they on, what, a point?
Well, they've been leading twice, I think, at home, and then... They were leading away at Galatasaray and they drew that game 2-0 to 2-2, and they were leading against Bayern Munich at home and then lost.
Yeah, so I mean, it should be 3 points at Copenhagen. We've then got obviously Luton at home, which should be another 3 points, and then we've got a week to prepare for going away to Goodison on the 26th.
Hopefully, by the time we play that, we should have Luke Shaw back as well, which could be, if you're looking at the two, we have had so many injuries this season, it's hard to keep track of, but Luke Shaw and Lissandro Martinez in particular. Fuck, I miss that little bastard. I miss him so badly.
They've never actually said what actually happened to Luke Shaw, did they?
What was it? I have no idea. I think it was muscular, but it's a long old injury if it's muscular. So I don't know, it must be something worse than
yeah,
that.
I mean, in regards to Copenhagen, I think we will have a good chance, because them being at home, you're not going to see the usual pragmatic style that you'll get with little teams coming to Old Trafford or the away grounds. So obviously their fans will be there, so their fans will want a performance. So it's just one of them taking chances.
Are you backing Haaland to score against his former team? He'll be bang up for it, surely.
If we can give him some fucking service.
Yeah, mate, he's getting starved. Again, that's a big problem with Antony at this moment in time, is that nothing is going into Haaland at all. The players
we're better with Martial up front.
Well, you think we'll start now? We don't want to start with Martial. He's definitely going to start Haaland, surely.
Fucking mannequin.
Yeah, he will. But I think we're a slightly better team with him up front.
Yeah, can you have like 30 seconds to try and convince me? Because
I'm not as big a Martial critic as my old man is. That's for sure. He absolutely detests him. But I think when Haaland plays, it's a little bit of extra chaos sprinkled on top of all the rest of the chaos that goes on, and Martial brings a little bit of calm and an ability to hold the ball up there. Like,
mate, you cannot possibly have, he say does that Martial quality. Holds the ball up better than Højlund.
Yeah, he does. Oh, he definitely does. Oh, he definitely does. You can't argue that.
So I mean, I can.
Going back to VAR, there's been 3 disallowed goals in the first half an hour.
It's
1-0 to Spurs, then Kulusevski scored, then disallowed goal Son. Raheem Sterling scored, disallowed. Casado scored, disallowed.
Oh, fuck okay,
it, I forgot that game was on.
There should have been a red card around as well.
Oh, mate, come on.
Honestly, why are we disallowing all these goals?
It's not
should
funny.
Be about
you laugh, it's not goals. Funny. That should it's be a game there. There's 4 goals and a red card in the first half. That's football. That's entertainment.
Two upsides absolutely. And a handball.
Yeah. Oh, fuck off.
Ridiculous.
Should we go and watch the rest of that then? Should we call it quits? Look, it's nice to have a positive pod after a win.
Do you not care about my prediction? You've done this before.
Absolutely don't, you told me that Martial's better than Højlund up front because he holds the ball up.
I didn't say that. I just said I think we're slightly better with him at the moment.
No, you said that he holds the ball up better than Højlund, which is an outrageous
opinion.
He
definitely does hold the ball up better than Højlund. Definitely.
I hope there's people in the comments that are equally as angry as me.
When it comes to Højlund, Højlund just flicks it around the corner and tries to spin and outrun and outmuscle people. That's what he does, basically.
That's outrageous. Right, what's your score prediction then?
I think we'll win 3-0 away. I think we'll win 3-0 away in Denmark and then come back in maybe a 1-0, 2-0 against Luton.
You think we're going to score 3 goals in one game?
Yeah, I do, yeah. I've got a really good feeling about it.
Spidey senses tingling, yeah?
Yeah, they are for some reason.
Well, we'll leave it on that then. You got your predictions in.
We certainly have a struggle to score goals in Europe, put it that way.
Yeah, well, our Champions League has been, well, that's where Højlund's been scoring his goals, right? He hasn't scored in the Premier League yet.
Well, he has from VAR ruled it out.
Oh, yeah.
Bravo. End it on VAR. Full circle, that pod. Look, if you can let us know what you think in the comments, as you always do. Although, actually, no, there are no comments on podcasts. That was a stupid comment. If you can, just leave a 5-star review. And we'll be back after the Copenhagen and Luton games. And if United can go into this international break, ending it with 3 wins, then a 2-week hiatus, we then go into, what is it? Goodison Park and St James's Park. 2 back-to-back difficult away games. It'll be nice to do that off the back 3 wins. But look, let us know what you think. Let us know what you think. I'm just going to end this pod. That's the worst outro ever.
This is a United People's TV and Listening Dog Media production.
Sports Social Podcast Network.